We can build back better, we can build back safer, and we can build back smarter. And we will do that by working together. So let's get cracking.
To tax, to borrow, or to cut spending. They're the broad options now facing the government as it prepares to foot the bill for Cyclone Gabrielle and the Auckland floods that will run into the billions. Budget Day is May the 18th, and it will be yet another driven by a major economic shock. Finance Minister Grant Robertson had been wrestling the books back into shape after the COVID years, but now has to pretty much rip up the election year budget he'd planned and start anew. He's also under pressure from the opposition, with National demanding assurances he won't oppose a new cyclone tax or levy to help pay for the cost of the recovery. Kia ora, welcome to Focus on Politics. I'm Jane Patterson. Cyclone Gabrielle struck with force in mid-February, with a national state of emergency declared on the 14th. More than a week later, the recovery efforts continue. New Zealanders in several parts of the country weigh their losses and come to grips with the devastation of their homes, their neighbourhoods, and infrastructure critical to not only transport around the regions, but economically, as key supply chain routes for export and domestic goods. Back in Wellington, Finance Minister and newly appointed Cyclone Recovery Minister Grant Robertson is also weighing his options.
Treasury have a unit that's looking at the overall impact of this on the economy, on the budget, the fiscal side of it.
There are also longer-term decisions, including whether people will be able to rebuild in some of the areas that are clearly vulnerable to floods and slips.
There is a lot of different ways that we can approach the devastating impact of these more regular severe weather events. Some of that is around people being able to move to go somewhere else. In other cases, it's actually building more resilient infrastructure around them so that they can stay where they are. Those decisions, again, have to be regional because they're very different in different places.
There are various examples, both here in Australia, that can guide this response, the Kaikoura and Canterbury earthquakes and the Queensland floods about a decade ago. National borrowed large sums to cover the cost of the Canterbury quakes, but in Australia, then Prime Minister Julia Gillard imposed a temporary flood levy. It had different levels depending on income, with those earning less than $50,000 or people affected by the floods exempt. The choices for Grant Robertson can be boiled down to three broad options. Raise money through a new tax or levy, borrow more money, or keep looking to make cuts to existing spending. While somewhat bound politically by Labor's promise of no new taxes this term, he's keeping all options open.
What I'm doing is what I think is the responsible thing to do. We still don't know the full scale of this event. We've got to work that out. Then we have to work out how we pay for the government's contribution. There are options in that regard. That includes reprioritisation. That includes making sure that we use the balance sheet, which is healthy, and it's consideration of other options as well. We'll work our way through that.
National seized on the possibility of a flood levy, with finance spokesperson Nicola Willis pushing the Minister in Parliament about his refusal to rule one out.
Isn't it an indictment on the Minister's economic management that faced with a rebuild following a natural disaster, you won't rule out smashing Kiwis with a new tax, something the previous government did not do following the Canterbury or Kaikoura earthquakes?
Mr Speaker, as I note, on the 4th of March, just a week or two after the Canterbury earthquakes, the then Finance Minister, Bill English, got advice on whether or not there should be a levy. As I have already stated today, we have not taken decisions.
The question then for National Leader Christopher Luxon: how would his party raise the necessary recovery funds if in government after the October election, as well as offering tax cuts?
Yeah, it's a very simple thing. It's appropriate to actually borrow for money to actually recover and build and invest back in those regions incredibly strongly. But sadly, this is a government that borrowed, you know, essentially $60 billion for COVID. It sprayed it everywhere. It was very loose with it. It didn't deliver any outcomes. And as a result, we've actually got into a really bad situation.
I get the attraction of ring fencing, borrowing and having the recovery money. But, I mean, the books are taken as a whole, the level of borrowing and the pressure that puts on other parts of the economy. So Is that actually possible?
Well, let's be clear. We've got a government at the moment that has a $30 billion light rail project in front of it.
No, I'm asking you about separating out the recovery and saying that you want to almost have like a two-speed or two-set.
Well, I want to be really clear. You know, we actually need to be able to define what the cost will be. We're not going to scribble over that, but actually we're going to make sure it's delivered. Having it defined and framed is important because, you know, that's what we specifically should borrow for and make sure that we invest back into the region. We still have an issue with our underlying economy, which we've had before we've actually experienced this disaster.
He says Grant Robertson should take a flood tax off the table now.
When New Zealand is hurting big time, we've had inflation at elevated levels now for over three quarters. We've had 2.5 years where people's wages are not keeping up with the prices of things going up. Imposing more taxes that reduces their take-home pay is not the answer.
ACT leader David Seymour says the government has other options other than taxing or borrowing.
Inevitably, taxpayers pay all government expenditure. The question is, will the cyclone be an additional cost or will the government rationalise its other expenditure? That's what's important.
So where can the government find $3 billion worth of additional expenditure?
Oh, well, easily. This government's increased the size of the public service by 14,000 FTEs just in the last 5 years without any additional output from the public sector. That's a couple of billion right there. If you look at the money that's been going into the Three Waters merger with no real outcome, there's another few billion. And then if you look at the questions around Auckland Light Rail, that's using up resources that are useful for reconstruction, engineers, project managers, and an awful lot of concrete and steel, exactly the resources that are required for rebuilding highways and railways in Hawke's Bay and East Cape.
Green MP Julianne Genta says this is the time to impose a windfall tax.
It's fair and it's appropriate for the government to look at those sectors that have been making huge profits, and we know big oil in particular globally has made a record year of over almost $200 million US in profit at the same time that we're being hit by catastrophic climate change.
Treasury says the response to the cyclone will be inflationary. Some food supplies will be severely limited in the short term, and in the medium term, construction and transport costs, along with a further squeeze on the labour market, will all contribute. Reserve Bank Governor Adrian Orr continues the central bank's inflation-busting crusade, hiking the official cash rate yet again this week. He was asked which options currently before ministers would make that job easier, and borrowing was not at the top of the list.
Reprioritisation of current spending and revenue raising through other alternatives makes the job of monetary policy easier, because it's redirecting current income rather than creating new cash in the economy.
And how much heed will Grant Robertson take?
Well, there's a range of views, aren't there? If we take everybody who's been commentating on this over the past few days, we've got people who want it all to be done from reprioritised spending, we've got people who want it to be done from borrowing, we've got people who want it to be done from levies. It's my job to pick my way through all of that, and a big part of that is understanding what the total bill actually is, which at this point we don't know.
The Reserve Bank Governor isn't just another commentator, is he? I mean, he's responsible for running monetary policy. He's saying it would make his job harder, inflation harder, if you borrow.
Yeah, look, obviously the total level of borrowing is a factor that the Reserve Bank Governor and others will look at when they are setting monetary policy. It's a balance. We've got to work our way through that.
300 kilo odd logs, huge logs, one after the other, rolling out of the forestry up above us, choking up the river with massive amounts of logs, and then the water bounces out with the sediment and comes pouring over people's homes.
It's not just the economic response the government has to worry about, but also the local forestry industry and the slash that's caused widespread devastation as logs jammed up waterways and came hurtling down the hills, smashing into homes, farms and orchards. The Gisborne District Council took prosecutions against five forestry companies in 2018, and the government's in the process of upping the level of fines through a law change. But there's been round criticism of authorities that they haven't done enough to prevent the slash yet again, causing so much damage during weather events. Forestry Minister Stuart Nash has called a ministerial inquiry due to report back at the end of April. Checkpoint's Lisa Owen asked him if he'd seen the damage for himself.
Yes, I have.
Is that acceptable?
Well, when you get this level of rain event, you're always going to get forestry and not just slash. So slash is from harvesting operations. But, you know, you're getting a mixture of native trees, of mature radiata that haven't been harvested, obviously, and slash. So working very hard with the forestry companies to better understand the management regimes required to mitigate the damage we have in soil rain events. I can say there's two different types of forestry at the moment.
Minister, can I just, I'm sorry to interrupt, but can I just pause you there? Because I'm sure you would have heard from the people on in Tolaga Bay, on the east coast there, even as far down to Gisborne, who have been working the land there, and community members who are absolutely ropeable at the condition of their beaches and their farms, because this is washed down yet again. You seem to be on the fence about whether that's acceptable or not.
No, no, what I am saying is with this level of rain event, it is inevitable that you are going to get trees washed down. Now, I need to see the final investigation into this, but my understanding it's about 40% from harvesting operations and the rest is indigenous and full trees.
Another pressing issue is law and order, particularly in the hard-hit Hawke's Bay. On Monday, Chris Hipkins addressed concerns about rampant crime within vulnerable communities and a lack of police resources on the ground.
So I've been getting a daily briefing from police on exactly what they're confronting on the ground. It is true that there is a heightened level of stress in the Hawke's Bay where people have been without power and without phone lines and so on, but police aren't reporting an increase in crime over and above what they would normally be expecting to deal with on a day-to-day basis. They have surged extra police into the district to provide that additional public reassurance. But any suggestion that things are out of control is just wrong. And amplifying those kind of rumours isn't helpful, and it doesn't help the police to do their jobs.
But that did not go down well with residents who described themselves as isolated and terrified, left alone to patrol communities with some people still without power and reliable communications.
Well, it needs to not be our community and our locals on the front line protecting us from the mongrel mob or the gangs or whoever it may be. It needs to be someone who can actually enforce the law and do something about these people that are coming out there. The locals can't do that. They can say, don't come in here, but what if they end up getting shot or hurt protecting us? It needs to be the army or the police force or whoever it may be that actually can give these guys some repercussions of their actions, because we can't do that.
Opposition parties frequently raising concerns through the week.
Look, what I'm saying is people don't feel safe in their community. They are asking for support from the police. They're asking for support from the army. Now, if the local leadership is calling for support from police and from the Defence Force, we should listen to locals who know what it's like on the ground.
What you don't expect in an emergency like this in New Zealand, in our country, is to then have the threat of some of that food and clothing and essential resources like generators to be threatened by parties, groups, gangs who want to take it for their own purposes. They are stealing from their neighbours.
As the week drew to an end, Chris Hipkins was still facing questions about the security of people at their most vulnerable.
You'll be aware that there's been some friction about this particular debate in recent days, and I don't want to diminish it, and I don't want any comments that I make to be seen to be diminishing it. I acknowledge for in those communities, it's a stressful time, and if they're feeling unsafe, then that's not okay, and we do need to provide that reassurance to them. But I'd also say it's important that where any crime has happened, where anything has been taking place, that people report that to the police.
And there'll be plenty more for the government to grapple with. In the shorter term, it will have to look at immigration settings, something Chris Hipkins had already signalled to ease labour shortages. A special recovery visa's already been announced and work is underway to change the rules for REC workers from the Pacific. However, re-examining border settings now takes on a whole new impetus, and it's not an easy fix with skills shortages a global problem. Then there are the really challenging long-term considerations, rebuilding resilient transport networks, how best to prepare and protect New Zealand for the future ravages of climate change, including the costly and complex matter of managed retreat. This is the first big test for the new pairing of Hipkins and Robertson. Crisis management is multi-layered, getting the practical stuff right on the ground, mobilising public resources in the best way possible, keeping faith with traumatised local communities, and ultimately providing the reassurance and confidence Aotearoa will need to push through yet another disaster. That's Focus on Politics. Thanks for joining us. I'm Jane Patterson. Mā te wā.